The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Well, hi, this is Ken Auerbach from Cartier Bernstein Auerbach in Steinberg. If you or someone you care for has been injured from no fault of their own, please contact Cartier Bernstein Auerbach in Steinberg at myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. Whether auto or work-related, slip and fall, trip and fall, construction accidents, dog bite, medical malpractice, or nursing home neglect, or various other types of negligence, please contact me at Cartier Bernstein Auerbach in Steinberg by visiting me at myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. I will represent you with integrity and passion. Living in pain from no fault of your own can be emotionally and physically detrimental and affect all aspects of your life. Please contact me, Ken Auerbach, at Cartier Bernstein Auerbach in Steinberg by visiting myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900 for an immediate and free consultation and the support and representation you deserve. Well, hi, everyone. This is personal injury attorney Ken Auerbach from Cartier Bernstein Auerbach in Steinberg. Welcome back to our program, From No Fault to Your Own. Have my great, great co-host here, Amanda Spinner. And so great to have Amanda back with us and her insights, and really fortunate to have her as part of the team in the office. You know, as you know, it's our goal to give you an insider's view of bringing and proceeding with various types of personal injury actions caused by the negligence of some other party. And among these areas that we have explored and we will continue to explore are car accidents, trip and slip and falls, construction accidents, medical malpractice, dog bites, nursing home neglect, products liability, and many, many other circumstances of negligence and the serious injuries that often occur. Through our journey together, hopefully we have removed some of the mystery and uncertainty and will continue to do so and help you feel both empowered, knowledgeable, and confident in the process. Well, we're back on the program here today, Amanda, and we've been talking about valuation of cases.
Yes.
And I think it's an important topic. It's as we know, oftentimes one of the first things that clients will ask us, you know, what is my case worth?
Exactly.
And so we really want to try to give you some insight, what our thought process is, how we evaluate cases, and what are the things that we look to. We've talked on the last couple of shows about car accidents and motor vehicle accidents, how we evaluate those. Those are slightly different because on a motor vehicle accident, not only do we have to show liability, in other words, that the defendant was negligent, but we also have to show that the plaintiff suffered not just an injury, but Amanda, what?
A serious injury.
Right. And the serious injuries we've talked about, we've gone through the categories of that. And so it's not enough just to have an injury. We have to prove a serious injury. And oftentimes a serious injury can be serious, but it may not be something that you think of in the English language as the word serious, but it is serious. So
right.
You can have situations where by definition, you can have a fracture, severe disfigurement, death, the loss of fetus. Those are, by definition, serious injuries, and they're kind of clear and obvious. But then we have other categories. We have two categories. One is 90 out of the first 180 days. You couldn't do usual and customary, mostly usual and customary things. And then there's another category that says you suffered a consequential limitation of a body system or part, which means not minimal. And so it's important to know that in that area, as we're assessing it and we're assessing what the value is of your case, we have to go through a whole process. We have to take time. We have to get information. We've talked about that. And really, day one, no attorney should be telling you what the case is worth because you haven't evaluated it. We don't know what your treatment status is. We don't know you're going to have surgeries. We don't know how you're going to heal. And so it takes time. So if you're going to do the right thing and evaluate a case, what you should do as an attorney is keep your mouth shut, or at least not tell a client something that you really don't have an answer to. You don't have an answer on day one as to what that case is worth. It may be obvious that it has some significant value.
Right.
And so, you know, we have cases where somebody comes in and they have severe fractures, severe disfigurement, a death case. And it may be clear that it's worth significant recovery, but there's no possible way one can give an actual number and be doing the job right. Right, Amanda?
Exactly. When a client comes in, as you said, oftentimes one of the first questions they ask, well, how much is my case worth? If someone's telling you how much your case is worth on the first day that you see them, run away, call us, because they are not doing you justice. They're either undervaluing your case, overvaluing your case. We really don't know when you first come in. Like you said, we don't know what your treatment is going to be like. Every single person heals differently. Every single person heals from different injuries differently. And injuries, even if it's maybe the same body part and maybe there's a fracture, those two things can be different. You might need surgery. You might not need surgery. There's a lot that weighs in, and oftentimes it takes months to kind of lay all of that out.
And so really what we're just trying to tell you is we want you to be knowledgeable, but we can give you a certain amount of ideas at the beginning in terms of how the process is going to go. And we may be able to tell you, yes, it's a significant case. But you know, the other thing that you don't know either is you can have great liability and you may have serious injuries, but you also have to find out as well, is there insurance coverage?
Right.
And how much is that insurance coverage? So a case is also worth realistically what you can recover. And realistically, and we could talk about this in other shows, is it's very difficult, if not impossible, almost, to recover from a person personally.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that most people don't realize. You know, one of the first things we do is look at the other person's insurance policy to see what's out there, basically. And basically, you know, sometimes you're hoping there's enough coverage there to compensate your client for the injuries, but that's not always the case.
Yeah. And then that's really why we've talked about on the show too, about the need for you to have underinsured on your vehicle and enough coverage, because in New York on a motor vehicle accident, you're looking at it and you can have in a vehicle, you can have a minimum of $25,000 worth of liability insurance.
Exactly.
And now a person I've had where horrific injuries, absolutely horrific injuries. And the only coverage there is $25,000. And that's really a bad thing. Now, if you're driving a vehicle, you should make sure to have the most underinsured you can. I've talked about motorcycles.
Yes.
Please do not get the minimum coverage for yourself. Make sure that you get as much coverage as you can in liability and underinsured, because your injuries oftentimes terribly are oftentimes catastrophic and a lot worse. So these are the things that we look at. And what we want you to understand is that you need to know that we have to look at each case differently, and we take our time, we evaluate it, and we're very upfront with you, and we say, okay, this is where we're at with it. We'll figure out what kind of coverage there is. We'll look to see if there's other additional coverages we could get to. Again, there are some very, very good attorneys out there. We certainly aren't the only ones. There's some great firms out there, but certainly if you go and somebody starts telling you they know what something's worth on day one, just don't buy that. It's just not accurate. It's not fair. And you really need to go someplace where it's someone who has experience and it's going to be really upfront with you and say, look, I don't want to tell you what it's worth, because it may be a lot worse or it may not be as bad. And we don't know other factors. We don't have all the liability picture in terms of, are you fully at fault? Is the other person fully at fault? Is there a combination? Is there percentages? Is there a limited coverage? So all of those things are not something that you're going to know on day one. It just doesn't work that way. And oftentimes it takes time. So the idea here is to gather information, understand that our job here is to get that. And our job is, if we need you to get something, we'll say, could you help us get X, Y, and Z? But don't really kind of focus on immediately, well, I need to know what the case is worth on day one. If the lawyer can't tell me that, well, then that lawyer doesn't know what they're doing. In fact, it's the opposite. It really is.
Right. Exactly. And that's for all types of cases too, not just motor vehicle accidents.
I think that's a really good point. And I think that maybe that'll get us to our next point on the show. We've been talking about automobile cases, and the reason why they're unique is because on the issues of damages,
right,
we have to be able to prove a serious injury in order to recover in New York. Otherwise, you're limited to your no fault. But there are many other kinds of cases that we handle, and we've handled almost every kind of case you could think of.
Yep.
You think about a trip and fall case or a slip and fall, a medical malpractice, a construction accident case. In those cases, the analysis can be similar, but it's slightly different. And so we could talk a little bit about that. And I know we've talked about on the show, we've talked about trip and fall cases or slip and fall cases. And again, what it requires for us to prove someone is responsible and to recover for your injuries. And the first thing that we do, of course, is we bring our client in, we sit with the client, and we have to get information. And that information involves something about the accident, right, Amanda?
Exactly. We're trying to figure out, again, the liability and the damages aspect of all the cases that we bring in. And like you said, sometimes car accident cases are a little easier to evaluate because if it's a hit in the rear, you kind of know where the liability is at. But other cases like slip and falls, maybe dog bites, you know, they all require a different, you know, showing under the law. And that's really what we have to focus on.
And so talking about non-auto cases, the difference is we do not have to prove, in order to get a recovery, a serious injury. We just have to prove there's an injury. Now,
exactly.
That doesn't mean that we're going to just take any case, because if there really isn't any a case that has any reasonable value to it, it just doesn't make sense from a business and sense standpoint or from a time standpoint for you or for us. But we don't have to prove those categories of serious injury. So we'll talk more about that when we get on the other side and just try to empower you with the knowledge of how we evaluate cases. Well, welcome back to our show. If you're just joining us, this is personal injury attorney Ken Auerbach. You're on the program from No Fault of Your Own. Have my great assistant and my associate, I should say, and my right arm here, my co-host, Amanda Spinner, where we're exploring the most important issues in personal injuries caused by accidents. If you or someone you care about has been injured as a direct result of someone else's negligence, please contact us at myinjuryli.com. It's myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. It's 631-654-4900. It would be our privilege to speak to you, our privilege to fight to get you justice. And we always have free consultations on all of our personal injury cases. And we will come to you if you need us to come to you. I just saw a client last night. It was really a great intake and really was fortunate to get to sit and find out about that client. Happened to be in a serious accident and hurt their knee very seriously. And in that case, actually came to the client's home. And I think I left last night about 8:40, but I got to meet some new people. And it's always fun to do that. And it's always a privilege.
Yes.
And but of course, we will see you in our offices, too. We have an office, of course, in Patchogue. That's our main office. But we have offices across to meet you in Nassau and Suffolk County and the five boroughs. Love to see you there. And we will go to a medical facility if you need us there. And we will come after hours, as I did last night. Whatever makes it easier for you. And please listen to our program every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. as we do continue to explore these issues. Now, Amanda, let's get back to what we were talking about, different cases, right? So they get evaluated differently. So an automobile case and, as an example, a trip and fall case gets evaluated differently. So if a person comes in on a trip and fall case, Amanda, what are the things that we start to ask about and what are we asking our clients about?
So we really want to find out how exactly the accident happened, what the conditions were, maybe if an outside case, maybe outside on a driveway. We want to know what the weather conditions were. We want to know what the ground was like. We want to know what shoes that client was wearing at the time. You know, you just try to get as many details as possible to kind of come full circle and figure out what exactly occurred.
Yeah, and it's really critical, the difference sometimes. It may not seem like a big deal to you. We have cases where a person says, well, you know, I went out and it was a snowstorm and it was snowing out and I'm in the midst of a snowstorm and I slipped. Now, there's law in this case law in the state that says that if there's an ongoing storm, that you cannot recover for that in general. There's a general principle that you want to give, the law wants to give the person or the commercial owner of the property a reasonable opportunity to remediate the snow and remediate any kind of ice condition. And so it is a general statement, if it's snowing or the event's happening in general, there may not be a case because the law says that owner of that property, whether it's a residence or a commercial property, has the right first to go ahead and have a reasonable amount of time to get out there and to clean it up after the storm stops. And that typically has been found to be a couple of hours.
Right.
But we have cases that I've had cases with a person and there is a storm and they're out there and the person takes a fall. And one of the things that we look to is we say, well, what did they fall on first? And as Amanda said, we want to know what they fell on, where they fell on it, and when did that actually exist? So let's draw the distinction. So let's say there's a storm going on and the storm has some snow to it. But the person actually fell really because there's been ice in the parking lot that was not taken care of for the last week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, could be 2 days.
Right.
And so the facility or the individual did not remediate that. And they certainly had plenty of time for the ice that was underneath that snow to take care of that. And they didn't do it. And I've had people that are really very seriously hurt. And we've made very substantial recoveries in a case like that. So, you know, each case is different. And as Amanda said, we have to look at each case. On trip and fall cases, we have to look at where it occurred. We have to look at who caused it. Is it a public entity?
Right.
You know, in a public entity, Amanda, we have a little different, usually a different requirement when it comes to a trip and fall, whether it's ice or a sidewalk or something like that. Am I correct?
Right. We have a different notice requirement. And we've kind of talked about this on other shows regarding also statute of limitations and making sure if it's, you know, a municipality or something that you're bringing the claim in time. Additionally, you know, there is a notice requirement. So we have to show that either there was written or some sort of notice to the owner or whoever's taking care of the property.
So each case, again, as we're looking at it, gets evaluated differently. And so if a client comes to us, and let's say as an example, a client comes to us and they have a terrible fracture of their leg. And they say, well, I tripped. Okay, let's go with, instead of slip and fall, let's go with slip and fall, right? This is the season for it.
Tis the season.
And unfortunately, it happens. So the client comes to us and they said, I slipped on ice. Or I slipped on, they typically just say a condition. And we say, okay, well, where did it happen? And so now we want to know where it happened. We don't want to know, well, how did it happen? Where were you coming from? Where were you going? Mm-hmm. Then we start asking the questions like Amanda said. Well, what did the surface actually look like? Mm-hmm. What was on the surface? Was it snowing at the time? Was there weather going on? And the client will answer the question, whether there was or there wasn't. And depending on what that is whether and what question we'll ask next. We'll ask him about
photographs. We ask all the time whether the person took photographs at the time that the accident occurred so that we are able to actually see the condition with our own eyes, even though we weren't there.
So we'll look at photos. We want to put a good eye on it. Sometimes we'll literally find things in the photographs that the client themselves didn't even remember.
Right.
And so what'll happen is let's say we're looking at ice, right, mm-hmm. Amanda? And the person comes in with the photo and we say, okay, well, how long has that ice been down? How long has that been like that? Now, it may be a person that doesn't either live there or maybe they were just coming onto a commercial premises. And initially they may say, well, I really don't know. I really don't know. And so what we'll actually do, and we've done it in our office, is we'll look at the picture. And now let's say the photo shows a blackened, dark ice. Looks like it has dirt on it. Looks like it's been walked on. There's footprints on that. What is that telling us, Amanda?
That it's been there for quite some time.
Right. So the law says is, did the defendant know or should they have known of that condition? So again, by us looking at it and carefully evaluating it, you may have evidence. It may just talk to you, that picture, and say, well, of course that had to be there because the reality is that it's blackened. There's people that have been walking over that. It couldn't have just happened then. It couldn't have just happened quickly. So those are some of the things that we do look at and how we, you know, we're assessing it. And with regard to it, each injury, again, is different. Sometimes we'll have a situation where we have a client who clearly has no responsibility for it. I mean, let's say that it was dark out. There was ice that was on a driveway. The light was out. Okay, well, that's telling you certain things. Likely that the client, plaintiff in that case, probably does not have responsibility because what are they going to do? If they had a place they had to go to,
right,
and they're walking, what are they going to do? But at the same time, you can have the flip side. What if the light is on? What if they can see what was otherwise there to be seen? What if it's an area where they're going to go and put themselves at risk? In that case, what happens with the liability picture, Amanda?
So again, that's all what we discuss as comparative negligence. So part of the, you know, liability goes on to the client.
Right. So we assess each one. So do you see now, folks, that when we're assessing it, we have to know, where did the injury take place? How did it take place? What are the circumstances? Are you partly responsible? Are they 100% responsible? What's the percentage? What are the injuries? Was there an actual injury that was caused by it? So we look at all of those things and assessing it, and we do that on every single case. Your case is unique. We'd be glad to talk to you about your case. If you have a particular case and you're wondering, hey, is someone responsible for my serious injuries and my injuries that occurred? We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to be able to help you as we continue to learn together and get knowledgeable. Listen, I learn every day as I'm doing this, and it doesn't matter how long you've been doing it. And knowledge is one of those things that you could keep on accumulating and should never stop accumulating. So we're really so glad that you're here on our show. On the other side of the show, we're going to have the great Dave Levenstein again posing questions. He always has great ones. So we'll see you on the other side. Well, hi, this is Ken Auerbach from Cartier Bernstein Auerbach and Steinberg. If you or someone you care for has been injured from no fault of their own, please contact Cartier Bernstein Auerbach and Steinberg at myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. Whether auto or work-related, slip and fall, trip and fall, construction accidents, dog bite, medical malpractice, or nursing home neglect, or various other types of negligence, please contact me at Cartier Bernstein Auerbach and Steinberg by visiting me at myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. I will represent you with integrity and passion. Living in pain from no fault of your own can be emotionally and physically detrimental and affect all aspects of your life. Please contact me, Ken Auerbach, at Cartier Bernstein Auerbach and Steinberg by visiting myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900 for an immediate and free consultation and the support and representation you deserve. Well, welcome back to our program again. This is personal injury attorney Ken Auerbach. Have the great Amanda Spinney here, my great associate. And we are talking about all kinds of issues in personal injury. We've been talking about over the last couple of shows, and certainly going to hit this topic again, the issues of valuation of cases and figuring out what is a case worth, how is that done, how is different cases and how are different cases evaluated differently? So auto cases, motor vehicle accident cases versus maybe a trip and fall, maybe a medical malpractice. And we are going to continue to do that. Please, if you have any questions, please always feel free. Pick up the phone and give us a call at 631-654-4900. It's 631-654-4900. We would love and be privileged to try to help you fight to get you justice. You can also get us online at myinjuryli.com. It's myinjuryli.com. We are joined again on our show by Dave Levenstein. David was on other shows with us here, and David actually gets a lot of questions posed to him sometimes after our show, but David's always thinking, and David's out there to help you, the listening public, try to understand some of these topics. And we got David back here today. David, we're ready for you.
You ready?
We're ready.
All right, here we go. I got some great questions. And the questions that I think about often. When there's an accident, when there's a dog runs out of a house and bites somebody or something goes on, right? When you sue them for damages, you're going after their, not them personally, but perhaps their insurance policies that they have, right? They should be properly covered, right? But there are times I would imagine that people don't have enough insurance to cover the amount of damage that might have happened in the accident. Someone could have gotten mauled by their dog, and maybe they're a tenant in a property versus the landlord, you know? And who's responsible at that point? You know, walking by a house, the gate's open, the tenant lives in the first floor, they run out. They bite someone. Well, the landlord says, well, I wasn't there.
Well, let me start it out.
It's a very complex question.
It's a very complex question.
But these are things that happen.
These are real things. These actually, right. David, what you just posed is a real thing.
Okay.
And I'll, you know, kind of give you a real scenario on most of the scenarios that occur. So you have a scenario where someone might own their own house.
Right.
And somebody comes on and their dog gets loose and actually bite someone and hurt somebody. And so we have to start out with the question, are they responsible to start out with? And in New York talks about the fact that you have to be aware, that you have to know or should have known of the vicious propensity of your dog, okay? And what that means is that you should have some idea that this dog would likely do something like this, might go ahead and be aggressive, might bite somebody. And so we start out in a case like that first having to say, is there any responsibility to start, period? Forget about who's the owner, and then we'll get to that question. And the answer is it depends. So what the law has said is it doesn't require that your dog has bitten someone before in order to have responsibility. What it requires is that you to be aware that the dog has a vicious propensity. Now, how does someone prove that you were aware, knew, or should have known of that? It could be many scenarios. So, Amanda, why don't you throw some of those out?
If the dog has been growling aggressively, if the dog jumps on the fence, you know, we have a lot of cases like this where people are kind of riding their bike by a fence. The dog's constantly growling and barking and very aggressive towards people. So that can, you know, make that case.
Or jumping up against the fence and scratching it and doing things like that. So let's assume now that we have a scenario like that. And or a dog, of course, could have bitten someone before. And we can get records from maybe the town, or maybe the neighbor knows, hey, that dog bit someone. And you can talk to the people that live in the surrounding homes. But so let's assume that we have that as the case. And we have a clear case that this dog was a dog that had vicious propensity and it bit someone. The owner of the dog, let's start out, which should have known about it. So now the question is it something you could recover on? Well, it depends. And so, David, you posed a really good question. You said, well, if it's an owner of the dog, they might be an owner of the house or they may be a tenant.
Right.
The owner of the house, theoretically, has homeowner's insurance. Now, the homeowner's insurance policy will cover you for your negligent acts in general. However, it may or may not cover you for your particular type of dog. And on another show, David, you and I had spoken about it. There are exclusions in a lot of these policies now, these homeowner policies, for certain types of dogs. So I've seen them for pit bulls. I've seen them for some Rottweilers. I've seen them for certain German Shepherds. Different types of dogs, and you need to know what your own policy says.
I remember when I was a tenant before I owned a house, and on the lease, it said what type of dogs are not allowed in the apartment building.
Right.
Yeah.
They were very clear about that.
Well, that's a really good point, too. But think of this. So I've had cases where the owner of the building, let's say it's a commercial building. Let's say it's an apartment complex type of building.
Okay.
And now you have a person who has a dog, and the dog is on premises. And the landlord doesn't own the dog, right? They're a commercial owner, commercial landlord. And there's an individual in apartment 6A that owns this dog. And this dog now goes ahead and mauls somebody, gets out and mauls someone. The question becomes is, do you have a lawsuit? Is there a viable claim that you can sue anybody to recover for your serious injuries? And again, it depends. So let's say that the tenant in this case had this dog, and there had been complaints about this dog beforehand.
Right.
And the complaints had been made. The landlord was aware of it. The landlord was aware of it. Maybe some of the other tenants, and it happens, I've seen it, have said to the landlord, this dog gets loose, it chases us, it growls at us, it comes up at us, it bites people. And the landlord, owner of the property, did nothing about it. They just sit back and they just keep on collecting their rent. In that case, we may have an action also against the landlord because they were aware of this dangerous situation on the premises in general. Mm-hmm. But didn't do anything.
Okay, so the landlord can be held responsible because the landlord knew of a dog that might have had a violent streak, right? Because of the way it treated its neighbors as it walked in front of the property.
Yep.
Right. Is the landlord responsible for keeping the front gate open? And another question I have with the same landlord-tenant situation, let's say I'm in an apartment building and I'm in the first, and this is a true situation actually. There's a landlord near a college campus, and it happened with my kid living on the first floor. it snows, the landlord is responsible for cleaning up the front stoop.
Okay.
And someone else, and somebody falls. And because it's not cleaned off properly, is a landlord responsible or is a tenant responsible because it was a snowfall?
Oh, well, it's a good question. So the dog scenario, right, mm-hmm. is slightly different, but it requires that idea of that vicious propensity.
Right.
Right. And a vicious propensity is basically saying we want them to have some prior notice of it.
Sure.
Similarly, right, in a slip and fall, Amanda, or a trip and fall case, we have to look at a few things when evaluating whether the landlord's responsible or the tenant. Amanda, why don't you pick it up?
So we always have to look at whether the landlord had notice of the condition and how long that notice was.
And in addition to the notice, we want to know, is there a lease? Is there a written document
right.
between the landlord and the tenant?
Right.
And we always request that. And what does it say? Does the actual document say it's the landlord's responsibility?
Mm-hmm.
Does the document say it's the tenant's responsibility or to what extent?
You once said in a previous show that there's got to be a reasonable amount of time for someone to clear their pathway, right?
That's correct.
Right. So what is that reasonable amount of time?
Typically, look, it's not an exact amount. Typically, the courts have said usually at least 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
After the storm stops.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because the thinking is that, you know, everyone has to at least have some time to go ahead and put things into effect and sort of, you know, go out, get your shovel, get your sand or your salt out, get your person there. And the law wants to allow you to have the time to do that to make your property safe and reasonably safe. So every case is different. But the fact of the matter is there is an obligation on the part of someone.
Right.
Okay. To do that. The landlord has to make arrangements. If the landlord's not going to do it, then they better make arrangements that the tenant's doing it. The landlord has a non-delegable duty to keep that property in safe condition, and we'll talk more about that on the other side.
Okay.
Welcome back to our program. If you're just joining us, this is personal injury attorney Ken Auerbach, and I'm here with my great associate and my co-host, of course, the lovely Amanda Spinner.
Hello. Who's
quite popular out there, I got to tell you, Amanda.
The fan mail, I heard that is
it's just
piling up on your desk.
Piling.
I'm telling you, no. But actually,
proposals for marriage, everything.
People,
I'm waiting.
People have said to me that they really love having her on the show, and I do too. I love her being around. So the bottom line is we're here and we're talking about issues in personal injury, and we're exploring those issues and issues that have caused serious injuries. And we want you to know, if you have an issue, if you or someone you care about has been injured as a direct result of someone else's negligence, please contact us at myinjuryli.com. That's myinjuryli.com, or call 631-654-4900. It's 631-654-4900. We really would be privileged to fight to get you justice. And our consultation is always free. We will come to you if you need us to come to you. We will go to a medical facility. We will come after hours. We will be there for you. We will make it easier for you. We have offices, main offices in Patchogue, but we have offices across Nassau and Suffolk County in the five boroughs. And we will make ourselves available. We want you to get your justice. And please listen to our program every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. as we explore these issues. So we have Dave Silverstein on.
Or Levinstein. Either one.
You want to know something? Yeah. I did that to Nick Caracappa.
He's not his name, right?
And now he did to you. But I have a friend, Dave Silverstein.
Well, hold on. You called Nick Caracappa Nick Silverstein?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
But actually, all kidding aside,
yeah.
I have a friend, David Silverstein.
Okay.
Okay.
And now you have a friend, David Levinstein.
And David was actually within the personal injury world that I was in. Okay.
Yeah.
So David Silverstein, if you're out there out in Seattle and you're listening to us, hello, welcome.
So I have another question.
Well, we didn't finish your last question.
But it has to do with the last question.
Go ahead.
Okay. In snow and the time that the owner of the property has the right to shovel, that's not the cure or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
Driving now, right, after this winter that we've had, this cold and high winter, there are in warm winter and the fluctuating, the potholes that are growing and growing. I notice them now driving around.
They're
I notice
so
them.
Bad.
They are so bad. And they weren't there 6 months ago. So how long, I mean, a car can get ruined. You can get hurt, actually. driving through those potholes. How long does a county have to fix those? So you have a claim against them, God forbid you should get hurt.
That's a really, really good question. I actually got a call about one of these cases yesterday. Mm. So the law says that they're supposed to be on notice, different from you or not or I. So our driveway, so let me explain to you. So if your driveway, David, you and it is Levenstein, by the way. It's not Silverstein.
Yes.
Just letting you know.
Silverstein, Levenstein, Goldstein.
No.
We're all the same.
If your driveway had a hole in it,
yeah,
right, the law would say, hey, if it's there for a reasonable period of time, probably just a couple hours, a few hours, that same day, you should know it's there.
Right.
Okay? How are you not going to know it's there?
How do you not know?
How do you not know?
Right.
And you don't have to actually be on written notice of that. No one's got to put you on written notice and say ahead of time, hey, by the way, you got this big hole in your driveway, and if someone falls in it, you're going to be responsible. Not required for a private individual. On a municipality, as you're talking about a public street,
sure,
there has to be some type of written notice that they have. So they have to either be on written notice of it, literally, and it depends where the notice is. Believe it or not, and people don't believe this, and if you're in Suffolk County, and I will tell this, okay, to make sure if you're a Suffolk County resident, you certainly expect that there's not going to be defects, you know, across your public roads, across your public sidewalks. You would have to go ahead and put someone on notice of that, or someone would have to be on notice of it, specifically the clerk of the county legislature, okay?
And how do you contact this person?
You'd have to file a notice of claim or not a claim, or you just have to put them on notice and say to the clerk of the Suffolk County Legislature, listen, there's a hole that's on this property. There's a hole in this driveway that belongs to the county. There's a hole on the sidewalk. And then the county clerk, and this case law where there have been people other than the county clerk. So think of, let's say, Suffolk County Community College. And I've had people that were injured up there, and there was no notice with the Suffolk County clerk. Believe it or not, that's not going to be good enough notice, most likely.
So even if you call, let's say, someone at the office of the Suffolk County Community College, you call them and tell them there's a hole in one of your roads.
Not good enough.
Wow.
Okay, and so each and every case is its own thing. We have cases, depending on where and what public roadway that was that you were talking about, we'd want to see, is there some type of written notice that's been recorded there? Now, the exception to the written notice is this, David. If you have someone who is out on the road for the municipalities and is fixing the road,
yeah,
and they create the actual condition. So let's say they're out there, and instead of putting in, let's say, 5 inches of asphalt that's required, they only put in 2 inches of asphalt.
Right.
And they leave it with a 3-inch gap still. Mm-hmm. And now you drive over it and you are injured. In that case, there's case law that says that the municipality in that case, or the employees for the municipality, may have created the condition, the very condition that occurred, so they can't now stand behind, we're not on notice of it, on written notice. But do you understand that?
Yeah, I do. But the thing about it is that if I'm driving down a road, if I'm coming to your house, a house that I've never been to before, and I'm driving there and I hit a pothole and I get injured, hit my head on the roof of the car, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. I have to now have my attorney, you, find out if there was a complaint about this particular pothole on this particular street.
100% true.
And if no one in the neighborhood put registered a complaint, I'm out of luck.
So what I would say to you is this. If one does observe something on a property that you think is dangerous, and it hasn't caused you a specific type of problem, but you think this could cause someone else a problem,
call it in.
Then not just call it in. So in Suffolk County, you need to file literally with the Suffolk County Legislative Clerk the actual complaint ahead of time.
Right.
So what you'll gather out of it, hopefully no one gets hurt after that, right? Yeah. We don't want anybody to get hurt. Hopefully what that'll do is then you'll get some type of a work order that'll go out and you'll save someone from getting hurt.
Right.
All right. Now, the towns are different in terms of who has to be on notice. Every municipality is different. So they could all say who is the person that these reports have to go to.
Right.
And it used to be, in New York City as an example, if you wanted to sue the city, and let's say it was for some type of hole in the ground,
yeah.
a hole in the sidewalk or in the street, there was something called the Big Apple Map. And there was this private, not-for-profit company. And they would go literally all over the city. And they would look to see if there are defects. And they would get a map every year. And they would mark this map up with all different legends and all that. And so, and they would file it in the right place. And then if you got a contact from a client and said, hey, I fell in this hole, first thing you would do to see if you could sue the city is it on the map?
Right.
Okay. Now, that's changed a lot. And the Big Apple Map isn't out there anymore, as I know,
huh.
because what happened was is the city decided that what they were going to do is they were going to require most landowners, okay, most, except for 1, 2, and 3 family landowners in the city who actually reside in the premises, are now responsible to maintain the sidewalks. So a commercial building is responsible to maintain that sidewalk now.
Am I responsible for my sidewalk in front of my house?
It depends on the municipality. And the only way you know that is you got to look specifically at your in your own town or your own village
yeah.
as to whether they've now put that over as to your responsibility. Each one is different.
Can that change from time to time?
It does. It can. And it's something you should look at and see if you are responsible. But it gets to a very important question. And it's something we should talk about on other shows is you know, what's right? What's fair? Okay. Should a municipality just be able to sort of avoid that responsibility, and I could hear it in your voice, simply because they're not on some prior written notice of it,
sure.
or should they have a higher standard? And we'll talk about that more in other shows. We'll talk about that. You know, we're all taxpayers, so of course, we don't want people to be making claims that aren't viable, and but at the same time, we want to protect the public, and where is the balance, right? It's about balance, right, Dave? And so, Amanda, why don't you finish this up?
Well... it's been great, David. I would love to have you on again.
I will love that.
Hopefully we can explore way more questions that the audience has for us. But we will see you next week.
Have a wonderful week, a safe week. Be safe.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.